Hello, everyone, and welcome to Masters of Digital Transformation, a podcast from AIM10X dedicated to uncovering the stories behind the world's leading change agents and the most valuable learnings from our community of global innovators. I'm your host, Caleb Masters, and as always, we're here to provide you with actionable insights from today's greatest thought leaders to guide and accelerate your journeys. In today's episode, we'll be joined by Jörg Hellwig, an investor and the former chief digital officer at LanxX, and we'll start by talking with him about his career journey before diving into today's topic, supplier collaboration. We'll cover why it's important to align production plans across suppliers and multiple tiers before taking a look at including suppliers and customers in the S&OP process. We'll then close out the conversation by talking about how to filter relevant risk signals from suppliers to generate actionable insights. But without further ado, let's get to know a little bit more about today's very special guest, Jörg Hellwig. Jörg has had more than 40 years of experience in the chemicals and process industry, and he combines extensive knowledge in running global businesses with digital transformation skills using integrated planning tools and organizational restructuring experiences, bringing strategy to strong execution. In his last corporate role, Jörg served as the chief digital officer at LanxX, a globally leading specialty chemicals company headquartered in Germany, leading the company's digital transformation initiative and all related activities. And he left that company last year and is now an investor, mentor, and consultant, and a member of the Executive Advisory Council of O9 Solutions. Jörg, welcome to Masters of Digital Transformation.
Thanks a lot. Happy to be here.
Well, Jörg, I think we're going to be talking a lot more about later today is supplier collaboration, a very pressing topic, I think, amongst a lot of supply chains today. But before we get to that, I want to just step back and learn a little bit more about you and your prolific career. What exactly led you to a career in technology?
Well, I hate to do this, but I have to correct you right at the beginning because I don't have a career in tech. I just learned during my career that tech is so helpful to do business. And so in my first years and decades, I had to live without a lot of technology and I had to do Excel sheets and workshops and emails. Just in my last 3-4 years with the corporation, when I became chief digital officer, I got into the tech world. I got thrilled about the possibilities. And then I was wholeheartedly pushing technology, was very open about the technology. And I found it not only exciting, but bringing a lot of efficiency and speed into business processes.
You would say, not coming from a background in tech, that you really saw technologies enabled to achieve the business results and efficiencies.
Absolutely, because in the old world with very static systems, you get reports about what happened in the past. And now with that technology on hand, especially data analytics, data platforms, cloud-based systems, I get options for my decisions in business. And that's so helpful. It's I believe it's a real game changer.
I think that brings a unique perspective. You know, a lot of the people we've talked to on the show, many of them really started in tech and worked their way up. I'm really excited to hear a little bit more about your perspectives looking at just purely from a business efficiency perspective. Now, what would you say is probably one of the biggest challenges that you've experienced in your career?
IT systems and the old way of doing IT, where IT systems were more, when you look at ERP systems, more like financial booking systems, and a lot of data was only put into the system to close the books, but the data was out of everybody's reach. Everybody was working on local Excel sheets, and so you could not connect the procurement with the production, with the supply chain, with the marketing and sales. And to overcome this, it requires A, technology, like what O9 Solutions brings to the market, and B, it also requires an open mindset to be open for technology, about technology, have the courage to test it. But the second you do this, it pays back many, many times.
Right. So did it feel especially risky when diving into new tech that you didn't know as well? What was that process like?
First of all, especially here in Europe, technology IT decisions are made by IT and not by business. So that's a big roadblock, a barrier, because the old IT mindset is leave me alone. I have so many things to do with my old systems to run my old silver boxes and don't crash it. That it requires a C-level decision, a CEO decision to go for that. It requires some investments, definitely, because you have to keep the old systems running until the new systems are up to speed. But as I said, the second you do this, you see the efficiency which is coming to your business, you see the speed, you see the options. It's a must decision a company has to make these days.
Absolutely. I think that's a good takeaway. Don't run away from challenge, lean into it. And again, there's more to gain than to lose for sure. And related to that, I mean, what would you say is perhaps one of the proudest achievements throughout your career?
Let's move 10 seconds away from tech. I believe it's people management. Every business is run by people. And I still have contact to teams which I was allowed to lead and to run. People still call me from 10, 15 years ago when I was responsible for them or for the individuals. They still seek advice. And on the other hand, it really brings you to the one point. If you have good people working for you and you make them work as a team and you add technology, this is just the miracle formula for success. And so people plus technology means usually success.
So bringing, again, your business acumen to the people management, utilizing technology to deliver those key results, that's really exciting. Taking your background into consideration here, I do want to move and talk a bit more about today's topic, which is supplier collaboration, something I think that's been really top of mind for a lot of supply chain leaders today. From your experience, why would you say it's so important to foster that cross-team collaboration in order to achieve the best business results?
It is because the world has become so fast and so complex that you have to team up, you have to collaborate. In former times, there was no procurement, there was purchasing. So you had your requirements and you had your setup of suppliers and you ordered and you got shipped and everything was fine. But today, with all the crises around the world, with all the challenges, you have to share data, you have to open up to your suppliers, to your customers, so that data can flow freely through systems. It requires to open up, it requires trust in that relationship, but it gives you the chance to become more flexible. So we still do five-year plans, but we don't know what happens next Monday. So we have to have data systems in place, which allow us to react and to as I said before, to have options for our business decisions. And that's what tech gives us and what is definitely a need to be way more open for technology these days.
The compatibility is there, the integration opportunities are there. I want to dig a little more into the why, though, that you laid out there. Again, the world at large is changing. Why would you say aligning production plans across companies and suppliers has become especially important topic, especially as we think about in the last couple of years? What is driving this demand for change?
See, I spend most of my career in the chemical industry, and in the chemical industry, you have very long value chains. So it's very often that you buy from a supplier of raw materials or intermediates, you do something with it, and two, three steps later, your supplier becomes your customer or vice versa. So, and that really cries for a data sharing. It also gives you the chance to look at special topics like sustainability, because many of the CO2 emissions these days happen because of planning errors and disruption in supply chain. So the more I open up, the more I connect with my suppliers and with my customers, the better is my chance to streamline efforts and to work together on one of the main goals of business these days. While we need to make money, we also need to become more sustainable, have less emissions in our processes.
Absolutely. I mean, sustainability being one of the key risks we're looking at, lack of sustainability and these negative environmental impacts, I think, are really top of mind and a very real threat whenever there's a lack of collaboration. What would you say are some of the other risks to supply chain or even costly outcomes on the business side that you've seen when there's a lack of collaboration or alignment across suppliers?
It has happened more often in the last years that you have disruptions in your supply chain, in your procurement scheme. So you must understand how can I fill these gaps and where are my options? So, and as I said many times already, it is speed. So if something happens, be it on my customer side, that my customer is changing the forecast, or on the supply chain side from my suppliers, or on the container side, or whatever, so many things are happening these days, then it's so important to have systems in place which allow me to scan the market and to also have partners on both ends which have the same issues. So the better you connect the systems with your suppliers and your customers, the better is your chance that if something happens, either something happens at your side or at your supplier side or at your customer side, then together we can overcome these issues and solve these issues on time to not add another disruption to the marketplace.
Speaking of disruption, at this point, we're, you know, coming up on 4 years removed from the beginning of the, you know, the 2020 pandemic with COVID. I do think the topic of an investment in supply chain resilience has still been discussed quite a lot. What would you say are some of the key trends that you've seen that are driving the demand for that supply chain resilience?
This overcoming of crisis situations, the need to become more flexible. But again, it's an investment into something where it doesn't seem to be obvious at the beginning because I have an IT system running. So why should I invest in another IT system? However, the IT systems of yesterday are so static that it's usually just mine. And I have to print something out and send it over by email to either my supplier or to my customer. And with today's systems, as I said, like the online platform technology, you have so many options now that you start with basic data and then you realize there's more data which we could share together. It becomes more efficient. I can go on a 24/7 system. I don't have time zones anymore as a barrier. I don't have different holidays, different calendars as a barrier anymore. I become more systematic driven, and people can use the gained time to become creative and take care of customers rather than fixing issues and looking for data, which is somewhere floating in my company, which I just cannot find because it's so difficult to take data out of 3, 4, 5 different static systems. And that's why I believe these investments are so much needed, that you can become more resilient as a company, have a competitive edge, and remain or become even more successful in the future.
You mentioned time zones there as one of the key barriers that are keeping or blocking collaboration. Are there any other notable barriers that you've seen that are keeping companies and supply chains from being more collaborative with their supply pipeline?
Biggest issue I've seen in my companies or the companies I worked for was that there was not enough data in systems. People were so used to work in workarounds in their local Excel sheets that they were doing production planning on a local static Excel sheet and were just sharing this with 1, 2, or 3 other people in the company. Not even sales saw what kind of production planning changes were made. So, and this is a mindset change. You have to give people technology, you have to give people software, you have to give people stuff which works. Not the best software in the world is accepted by people. It has to be a pragmatic approach. And that's why I love the online stuff so much, because it's so easy to integrate it and it's so easy to operate. It looks like an Excel sheet at the end, but there's so many sophisticated ways and means to optimize your processes that people accept it much easier. And if people accept it, then they will let go of their Excel sheets and they will work more in systems. And that's a prerequisite, that you have data, all the data, all the necessary data in the system, so that you can then start optimizing your business based on data.
Having all of it in one place is really going to make it obviously easier to share, as you put it out there. Having it all centralized one place, easy to digest and look at trends and communicate In terms of ease of use, which you also referenced there, it's easy to operate. Having the proper training or understanding for how the tool works also can be pretty important, I imagine, especially when you're talking about across suppliers. What role would you say a successful supplier onboarding process plays in fostering that trust between different companies or suppliers?
Onboarding is massively important because you only have one chance to convince your own people to work with these new systems. And so onboarding means also connect data systems with each other, have the APIs in place, and have to correct data in real time in the system. So if you don't put enough effort into this onboarding process, you may fail, or I believe you will fail at the beginning. And then it's a good argument for everybody. Look, I told you, let me work on my Excel sheet that has been working for the last decade, and don't come with this new stuff. So put more effort into onboarding, make sure it's running, test it in a sandbox, and then push the button when it's running. Nothing has to work 100% at the beginning, but people have to see that it's helping them to do their job, and then they will do the utmost to make it a perfect system. Plus, also realize, hey, some data is missing. We need to put this also in. So that gives me then the chance to do my job perfectly. Plus, I can also use time for other things because the system is learning how it's done in the right way. But then you will see that systems are upgrading itself because people are so motivated to not only do the job they have been doing over the last 10 years in a good way, they see more and more opportunities to support this. And then again, topics like sustainability get higher on the priority list because you just have time and you try to find ways and means to support also such goals like a company needs to become more sustainable.
Right. And you're focused less on the technical and just the data sharing and much more focused on, again, strategic, very important company priorities. People have spent so much time looking at the spreadsheets, they haven't been able to really get above the data to look at how to be more strategic and efficient for the planet.
Absolutely, because many times you spend more time in searching for data, which is somewhere in a system in a company, than using the data. So, and if you set it up correctly, then the data will be there, and then you can concentrate more and more on what you called strategic issues. How can I make these processes better, and how can I serve my customers better? And your supplier would love to work with you even more closely because it's easier to do business with you, and easier means more efficient and means more profit for everybody.
Yeah, I think that's well said. It's a win-win all across the board. You know, we're going to talk a little more about the specifics of tech, but are there any more technical barriers that you've seen throughout your career or heard that supply chains are encountering when they collaborate?
I believe we touched the main points. Everything else is just details, and it's a case-by-case observation. Every business is different. The second you attract people to work with technology, you will see that they are highly motivated to optimize everything. I think one of the biggest obstacles is really that there's a different and perhaps a wrong understanding of data security at a certain time. Yes, I have to have trust with my supplier. I have to have trust with my customer. But that's what business is all about. I mean, at the end, we need to trust each other, and we open up. We don't drill fire holes into our systems. We just API ourselves. And the more open I am, the more open my partners will be with me. And then there's more data in systems flowing freely. And then it just gets better every day. And that's the cool thing. That's what I got so excited about, that coming from my Excel world, going into the O9 solutions platform driven world, it's like quantum computing. It's just milestones done within days and not months and years.
Other thing I want to hit on, you know, we're talking about fostering a successful partnership with technology. S&OP processes obviously have a role to play in this as well. From your perspective, Jorg, why is it important to include that either that customer, that supplier, or that consumer feedback in the overall S&OP processes?
Because you cannot be successful if you are not market-driven anymore. In the good old days, you had your assets, you had a competitive edge about many things. You were more or less alone with your specialty products, and customers were happy to pick up the products from your ramp. In these days, you have to fight for your competitive edge, and you have to make sure that you remain competitive. You become even more competitive every single day. And S&OP is everything. S&OP is procurement. S&OP is production planning. It's steering. But it all should start with the forecast, with the market forecast. And my market forecast is also the forecast for my supplier of my raw materials and intermediates. So it is an ongoing system. We should also go away from budgeting and forecasting. We should look at extrapolating data every single day. So you can always look 4 weeks, 6 months, 12 months, 18 months into the future. You can run your cash flow by that. You can run your resources by that. Plus, you have the ability then to optimize certain things in talking perhaps to your customer. Say, do you really need these 2 tons of material next week? Because I saw you just picked up 10 tons last week. And last time we talked, you had only consumption of 2-3 tons per week. I can give you that material, but I would have to change my production schedule, which would perhaps create waste, perhaps create cost. So it's an ongoing ping pong system of optimizing. And if you have a trustful relationship with your customer, you ask the question. If you have a good relationship with your supplier, you just keep on optimizing the system, even if there's disruption in the system. And that's the cool thing, because you have so much data on hand that you can anytime break into the system and say, okay, I see a chance of saving 2 trucks going half empty north, south, or I can avoid breaking into a longer campaign of my production schedule, and so on, and so on, and so on. And I believe this is key, and this is also so valuable for the partners in the chain, like my supplier, like my customer, that it's a win-win situation for all parties involved.
Having that data visibility gives you an opportunity to open up more channels for feedback to, like you say, only further improve the processes and the relationship overall. This one's a little more of a technical question here, because we're heading towards the end, and I just, you know, for our listeners who maybe be asking the question, they're like, hey, this new tech sounds great, but you know, I don't really know exactly what I'm looking for, what sorts of questions to ask. York, why would you say it's important to find a technology or a partner that is able to seamlessly integrate those essential collaborative features that we've spent a lot of time talking about today alongside maybe a system's normal advanced functionalities?
Because every business is different. Every business comes out of its own history. So you have different data sets. You have different systems in place. So today's good technology can really deal with this. So you don't waste months to redo your data before you can put it into the new system. The new system is able to connect to very old systems, to old systems, to newer systems, and then API the whole thing. So onboarding is important, but good technology also gives you speed in onboarding. And then you have everything on one platform that you don't have to run batch things or whatever. It's more or less real data, real-time data. And that is important, that you have the early success. You see that it's working. And then you focus on optimizing the whole thing. And that's my definition of good technology, that it's working fast, it's integrating the data, is seamless, you don't lose data. Plus, it gives you then the chance also to add more or less an indefinite amount of data every day, every week, every month, because today's bad decisions are not bad business decisions. It's just decisions made with the lack of data. And if you have more data, then you have a much better chance of making good and better business decisions and make more profit.
Right. Well, thanks for sharing that bit of advice for listeners. Again, no bad business decisions necessarily per se. It's decisions made without all the information. Well, Jörg, to close us out, I wanted to get maybe a lighter topics for you today, because I know that you've recently ventured into investing and also are executive producing an upcoming film. What can you tell me about any of the projects you're working on for your latest chapter?
When I was in my corporate career, there was very few contacts into making my own investments. When I became chief digital officer, I had to dive deep into the tech world, and the tech world is startups. It's new technology. It's great people having a business idea and go full steam for it. So I learned a lot. And when I thought I had learned enough, I also got attracted to, why don't I put my private money into such businesses? So I became an early stage investor in different fields. Many people have asked me that very same question. So how do you invest? What is your technology? What is your industry? What is your focus? And my very simple answer is, I invest in people. So I look into the business plan, yes, I look into the business idea, I look into the industry, but at the end of the day, I look at the people coming up with this idea, with this excitement, with this motivation to create something which is having such an USP that it will become successful. So I have invested into digital health, I have invested into construction, I have invested into football, soccer. I have invested into med tech, into gov tech, and my last investment just recently was into a film, like a early stage investment as an executive producer into a film. A friend of mine had the idea to redo a already filmed small German movie in Hollywood. So we redid this film with private money. Some other German business people invested into this, so it's completely privately financed. We got Ving Rhames as the star in the movie. Everybody knows him as a Mission Impossible in Pulp Fiction. Dominic Miller from lead guitarist from Sting made the soundtrack for the movie. Joanna Cassidy is in the movie, who was the co-star with Harrison Ford for Blade Runner, and so on and so on. So it's very, very exciting, brand new for me. But at the end, it's a product, and now we have to find the market, and it's business. So that's what is so exciting, to see that whatever field you go in, it's every time the same. It's product, it's market, and sell. It's to people who either want it, or you have to tell them, you don't know that you really want it, but I tell you that it's great and you will pay for it. And that's the last investment I've made, and I'm super excited about it.
Well, I'd love to hear that you're investing in people who are working in causes that you really value, but with also from a business perspective, looking at that return on investment as well. So I'll tell you what, I'm a big movie guy, so I'm very excited to see the film once it's ready for market. Jörg Helwig, thank you so much for joining Masters of Digital Transformation today.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning into today's episode featuring Jörg Helwig. To keep up with more episodes of Masters of Digital Transformation, please make sure to give us a follow or subscribe on your preferred podcast app, and leave us a rating and a review if you really enjoy the conversation and found it insightful. That's most relevant on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And of course, you can learn more about the AIM10X activities available by following O9 Solutions on LinkedIn. As we wrap up today's show about supplier collaboration, I'd like to leave you with this thought from Henry Ford when he said, "Coming together is a beginning, staying together is progress, and working together is success." Thank you so much for joining us, everyone. In our next episode, we'll begin winding down this year's Masters of Digital Transformation with an interview featuring the former Chief Growth Officer at the Coca-Cola Company, Francisco Crespo, to discuss the exciting opportunities for revenue growth management in 2024. You won't want to miss it.